Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Hello and welcome back to Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter and I'm joined by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza, and we are your primary selection team here at Cattle. Hey, ladies.
Hello.
Happy Pride, everyone. I will say, kind of despite everything going on across the country and how scary this has been for libraries, this is something we've been doing and we still want to do to continue to support and uplift our LGBTQIA plus community. And we just love the books that we're talking about. So we're going to talk a bit Pride. We're going to also kind of, we have another, we're talking retellings and remixes as well. So just sort of, and some of those, we have some books that bridge the two ideas. So I think I'm going to just get right off started. I've been really thrilled to see Greater Lansing's poetry community thrive. I was less aware of it as a child, so I don't know how it was then, but especially in the last few years, I've been really aware of it and seen a lot of movement and seen chapbooks coming out of the poetry prize that they award. And that's one of the ones that I want to talk about today is a book by a new chapbook by Connor Beeman called a new chapbook by Connor Beeman called Concrete Rust Morrow. Connor was the winner of the Ritzenhain Emerging Poet Award. And this is this is Midwest poetry. This is post-industrial world. It's so viscerally Rust Belt. They write about their hometown experiences in Akron largely, and so there's a lot of it feels set in Ohio, but it feels as much like our rusty areas of Lansing or rusty areas of Detroit too. It's just so very recognizable. But it also explores queer history, some of that kind of coming to terms with what it means to have lost a whole generation to AIDS, what it means to live in a world that's treating the LGBTQ community the way it is right now. It's but also kind of swinging back to the current epidemics and the opioid epidemic. So it's very now in some ways, but timeless too. And I was just really taken with the collection. So I think everybody should give it a try.
Excellent. And I have to say, as a librarian who's been in Cattle for 20 years, when I remember poetry was, I didn't think our collections really circulated that well.
No.
Years ago.
Yeah.
We didn't even as a system really have much selection in those areas.
Exactly.
I mean, we had some, probably some local interest for each location, each branch titles, but the growth of poetry at many of our branches in particular has been really great as a selector, and I'm purchasing a lot of what I see out there.
Right,
so it's
right.
been a really exciting change.
Yes.
And again, like you said, the actual local movement, and then we have a lot of those local poets in our collection, and we're always willing to add them if they're not there too. So
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have a middle grade book. It's called The Civil War of Amos Abernathy. It's by Michael Lally. And this was actually released in 2022, I think. And this is a really, really interesting book. I really liked it because some people don't like the going back and forth between timelines. I kind of do. Mm-hmm. It took me a little bit to figure out what he was talking about. But Amos is a 13-year-old child. He is a young historian. He lives with his mom. His mom is the leader of the local history park. I'm picturing like a Greenfield Village thing. He's really into historical reenactments. And he's also a child who has said he is gay, and he came out when he was in fourth grade. So he lives with his mom, and his mom has, because she is the manager or leader of this local history park, has allowed Amos to become somewhat of an apprentice or a junior reenactor. So he's always in, I don't know what you would call it, historical garb at the park. And he has two friends, Ben and Chloe. They work together. And there's a lot of mention of just opposite mindsets about how people view church, how people view LGBTQIA plus communities. So you're kind of reading about the two perspectives, I guess you could say. And Amos, because he's a historian, he is challenged to come up with an idea for an exhibit at the park. They want to change an exhibit out, and he and his group, they really, really want to win. And his friend Ben says something to him to the effect of like, well, back in the Civil War times, were there gay people or something along those lines, And it's something that Amos has never thought about. And he's like, wait a minute, I have not seen people from my community really discussed in historical exhibits or places like this. One of his team members is Chloe. She is a Black American young girl, and just like all these little things that people don't talk about are history, they begin thinking about. So he takes it upon himself to learn about more history of LGBTQIA persons from the United States, and he comes into contact with Albert DJ Cashier. Now, if you don't know who this is, I didn't really either. I read the book a little bit ago. We have a title called The Fighting Infantryman, The Story of Albert DJ Cashier, Transgender Civil War Soldier. This is by Rob Sanders. And I'm not going to talk about that book so much, but I do want to recommend it. So he comes in contact with learning about Albert DJ Cashier, and he starts writing letters to Albert. Kind of describing his daily life and, trying to answer these questions. And he learns that Albert was someone who decided to present as a man in order to serve in the Civil War. So it's just this really interesting book where he's like really asking deep questions of his society, of himself, mm-hmm. of his local community, which is in Illinois, which is also where Albert Cashier is from or settled, not too far away from his modern day town. I really, really enjoyed reading about just one child's quest to understand himself and his community better, but also trying to contribute to the conversation of, I want everyone to understand my history, the history of the LGBTQIA community.
Very cool.
Wow, yeah. That is such a unique premise for the book.
Yeah. Underrepresented history. Yes. Yeah. Something that's very... I guess close to my heart. I want to see people represented and included and stories told. So
right. Absolutely. I think we share that in this group
and
bringing those stories out. I'm fascinated by how much our books relate in some way because the themes are very similar, I would say. But I'm also thinking just about, growing up in the 90s, being in high school during Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and thinking about where we were then and where we are now. And just remember all those news stories during that era about that and about the transformation in the military since then and as it continues to transform. This book that I'm going to talk about is, again, not really my selection area. It's fiction.
We do that a lot to each other.
Fiction,
it's all.
But lately, fiction has been calling me as a nonfiction selector. I just don't feel like I have time to read that much of it. But this one, we had an advanced reading copy of it come into the office, and I snatched it up right away. I was planning on going to my stepson's Army Reserve ceremony where he was awarded second lieutenant. And I was planning on that. And I had sort of in my mind, Army, trying to think about, what is the Army? I don't know that much about it. So, and this book really grabbed me because, again, it's a telling of a story that is not told.
Exactly.
Has not been told, except for in maybe little small books here and there that are not well known. But it's also a bit of a pride story, too. It has a little bit of everything. So, without further ado, the title is called Women of the Post by Joshunda Sanders. And this is a story of a bunch of women who are together. And each chapter is
you know, alternates between the women's stories. It's about the 688th Central Post Battalion and the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps during World War II. And this was a true battalion. This was based on true facts, based on true people. And it was an all-black female battalion. And we start our story with Judy. She lives in the Bronx with her mother, Margaret. Her husband is fighting in World War II. She has not heard from him. She's really terrified, and she's trying just to kind of deal with that. And she works in this really horrible, extremely horrible, true to history, deplorable place called the Bronx Slave Market, which is essentially a place where black women would go and work and clean, get paid extremely low wages to clean white women's homes. And they would get hired for the day. They'd have to ride up in the car with people, or, you know, it was really kind of really demeaning and terrible. She does not like it. Where her mother, Margaret's like, we have to do this. This is what we have to do. This is it. This is our life. So one day she sees a recruiter and she's like, you know what? I need to get out of this. Okay, I'll do this. What is it? The Women's Army Corps. So she joins. She goes into basic training in Iowa, and they actually go off to England. And what they're doing, what this group is doing, is they're sorting millions of letters that got backlogged. They, during the war effort, they actually got trapped or backlogged for various reasons. They're damaged, many of them, and there are literally millions of them. And they're stacked floor to ceiling in these huge bags, and they have to sort them. They have to put them back together. They have to get them to soldiers and back to families at home. And the morale, as we know from history, of these letters was huge, you know, what it could do for people's morale. But this story is about Judy and her husband who's lost in the war at this point. It's about Mary Alice. I don't want to give away that story because it's incredible. It's also based on a true story. And it's about Charity and Abby, who are commanding officers in various, you know, one's a lieutenant, you know, different positions. And they're friends, but they also are in love. And it's about how they have to hide that, how they cope with that. And that piece of the story is actually based on history, too, because in Jashendra Sandra's research, she did discover that there were female couples in the military. And, of course, they had to hide it. But in some ways, the experience of being in these all-female battalions gave them a little bit more ability to pursue their relationships, again, hidden. But so that was based a bit on history, too. So this is just an excellent work of historical fiction. I don't read a lot of that genre, but it just was absolutely wonderful. I learned so much from it, and it just tells this extremely important story. It's not all sweetness and light. There's a lot of racism. There's a lot of just female bonding, empowerment, and ultimately just this beautiful story about this amazing contribution of these brave women to our history that needs to be told.
All right, then. Okay, obviously, I want to read that book, too, but you got it. the advanced reading copy came to me.
Sorry.
No, that's totally okay. Clearly, I've got enough to read. I want to talk about A Spindle Splintered. This actually came out, it's sort of a duology, so there's another book I'm going to briefly talk about. But these are subversive, fractured fairy tales. A Spindle Splintered leads back to Sleeping Beauty. We have in it a young woman who is just approaching her 21st birthday. She lives in Ohio, and she has a fabulous best friend, but she also is living under her own version of a curse. Her family lived in a community that some sort of chemical issue, but children in the community were affected by whatever the chemical was, and none of them who were affected have lived past the age of 21. Her 21st birthday is coming up. She's just got this heavy weight on her life. She's excelled because of it. She's tried to do everything she can do in some ways, but with sort of the plan of not having a plan after her 21st birthday. But her 21st birthday comes up, a party is thrown for her by her friend. It's big and elaborate, and they play off the Sleeping Beauty theme. And they have it in this tower that they go to, and they're not supposed to be in, but they all go to and hang out. And she had gotten a spindle from a thrift stop and brought it up. I mean, she's just trying to play up the whole thing. And because it seems right at the time, she pricks her finger on the spindle and isn't there anymore. She's someplace else. And she's looking at this woman who's about to touch a spindle and tells her to, a princess, like visibly a princess, and tells her to stop. And then kind of, it's all off the rails from there. We've got her out of her story, her contemporary Ohio story. We've got a more recognizable Sleeping Beauty character who has been interrupted and has not pricked her finger. So she's now kind of blown through her curse in some weird way. But then we've got our hero who can't figure out how to get back home, and a princess that she wants to save, and it just goes interesting and spiraling from there, because there are lots of Sleeping Beauty characters, and then there's also some overlaps with Snow White's, and Alex Harrow, the author, just does a wonderful job of playing with this. And the fun thing about the narrator is that one of the things she did in college is study folklore. So she recognizes these other timelines or other storylines as they're happening, and kind of can see the overlaps. So you get the sort of a meta version of, okay, this is the way the story goes this way, and this is how the story swings left, and this person tells it. And the Grimms just changed everything up in some cases, and you know, the original stories didn't even have a spindle. It was just the flax that poked the lady. So it's a fun and quick, these are novellas, take on the fairy tales, and I highly suggest them. The first one is A Spindle Splintered, say that fast. And the second one is A Mirror Mended, and these are by Alex E. Harrow.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I kind of have something along those lines. I have a picture book. It's called Reading Beauty by Deborah Underwood, illustrated by Meg Hunt. And this is somewhat of a retelling of Sleeping Beauty. You've got Princess Lex, who's really, really into books. In fact, she has a dog who will go and fetch them for her. And all she has to do is say, go get me such and such. But at some point, her parents decide to take away her books. On her 15th birthday, she's like, what happened?
I mean, all my books. That's just not right.
Exactly, exactly. Well, she comes to find out that there was a curse issued at some point during a birthday party. And if she were to get a paper cut, you know, she would disappear.
Okay. All right.
So her parents are rightly concerned, right? The fairies, like, the fairy is like, yeah, you guys didn't invite me to the party, so, you know, whatever. I'm cursing you. And Princess Lex is just really beside herself that she doesn't have, you know, her books. And she is afraid that she really is going to, you know, sleep away her life. And little by little, she's got herself kind of isolated in the tower, wondering what's going to happen. And the dog is still around, trying to hold her up, keep her going. But eventually, she starts to develop these ways of, how can I get out? How can I try to figure out how to get my books back? And of course, the fairy is watching and tries to throw things along her way. Somehow, she does something so that the fairy ends up herself getting, temporarily, we'll say, dead. This is such a fun book. It's illustrated beautifully. It kind of looks like they're in the sky, like on, you know, on some other planet. It is from the makers of Interstellar Cinderella, if you remember that book. It's really, really cute. And all I'm going to say is that it ends really well, really, really well. Let's see. The fairy becomes someone who helps people find books.
It's quite the transformation from temporary death to someone who helps people.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, that sounds really fun. So on the vein of folk tales and fairy tales and retellings, I was able to pick up not one of those, but a book, the memoir of somebody who wrote and illustrated many and many of those, over 100 to be exact, Jerry Pinkney. And this is Jerry Pinkney's memoir, Just Jerry, How Drawing Shaped My Life. And Jerry Pinkney did pass away in 2021, and this was published posthumously by his family. And it include, but the material was there. You know, he was planning this book. And one of the first thing that's really noticeable about it is it's filled with his illustrations, which are just incredible. Yeah. What a master. You know, he's like a king of children's books to me. But it's also brown text.
Yeah.
I was like, huh, why is this? Well, Jerry Pinkney was dyslexic, and when he wanted this book to come out and be published, he wanted the font to be in such a way that it was easier for dyslexic readers to read. So that was intentional. And that is really part of his story. But Jerry grew up in, this is really just an amazing story. It'd be good for, you know, older children, but also adults. Anybody who loves literature, who loves just a wonderful story. He grew up in Philadelphia in an all-black neighborhood, and he had this huge, boisterous, loud, but wonderful family living in a small house. And this isn't really a story of, like, family trauma or anything like that at all. It's really a story just about a boy, though, that was really sensitive and dyslexic before people could figure out what was going on with him. Why couldn't he learn very well? He had a lot of struggles in school, and he was also really hypersensitive to noise, kind of emotionally sensitive. And in this huge house where there was no room, he shared his room with two brothers. He didn't have a lot of space, so he would, like, go under the piano bench. You know, he would, like, find little places, and he would draw. And at a very young age, drawing was his refuge. And he drew to sort of manage his feelings. And his friends, it's really kind of cute. It's this era where kids always were all running out around the neighborhood till late at night, and there are all these adventures with friends and that sort of thing. But they wanted to come out, and sometimes he was like, I don't want to come out. I got to draw. And if he just got overstimulated, he would turn to drawing. So there's a lot of that, you know, the childhood fun and struggles and that sort of thing. There's experiences with this, growing up post-Jim Crow and with the effects of Jim Crow, rather, still affecting his family and his neighborhood, you know, going to, the fair and not being able to go to certain parts of it, you know, that sort of thing figures in. But what it's really about how he unravels this ability to draw so well and the people that believed in him, including a cartoonist who took him sort of under his wing and was like, you know, you've really got some major talent here. And then about how he turned that into a career that in the back of the book, he has a timeline of his life. And there are about 2.5 pages of the awards and exhibits and honorary degrees that he's won for this work. If you haven't picked up a Jerry Pinkney book, please do. Our collection is filled with them, and his illustrative style is unforgettable. If you aren't familiar with it, you will be, and you'll see it and always know that it's him.
Very much.
Yeah, it's just absolutely incredible. And all these retellings, bringing them back to people, to children. So this was one of probably the best books I've read this year. I absolutely loved it. Just Jerry, How Drawing Shaped My Life.
Nice. Well, my last title is Eat Your Superpowers, written by Tony Buzio, and pictures are by Serge Bloch. Wow. This is a nonfiction book. It looks like a board book. One of our activities on our Babies and Toddlers Reading Challenge is name foods in your refrigerator or cupboard together. So this would be for a parent to do with their child. And this is a lovely little compact book. They're just spreads of beautiful photographs of fruits and vegetables with a little bit of illustration on top of it. I don't know if I'm describing it correctly. So there's red and pink foods. There's orange and yellow foods. There's green foods. There's blue and purple foods. There's brown and white foods. There's food options. There's the body chart. There's all sorts of ways. And with the fruits, the book is got the photo on one page and then the kind of like the tip. Red grapes help you fight drippy, sneezy allergies. The very bottom, quercetin. What is that? I don't know. I hope a child will investigate. Tomatoes guard your heart and keep it relaxed. Lycopene plus potassium. That's what's at the bottom. So it's kind of like singling out little nutrients, vitamins. Watermelon, I love that one. It looks really good too. Sweet and juicy helps you stay hydrated. Water. It's a book really to review, I would think, with preschoolers right on up to maybe third grade. It's very simple, but it kind of just points out like all these like healthy things that are inside our fruits and vegetables. So.
Hey, cool.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Love it. That's it.
All right. Thank you, guys. And thank you. Everybody, happy summer reading.
Happy summer reading.